Hello, do-badders. It's Anya here, your shoddy social media manager for the Bad Boy Running Podcast and isolation expert. So I know everyone is heavily affected by what's going on at the moment, and I'm sorry about all your race cancellations. The food and drink industry has been pushed to breaking point in recent weeks, and independent businesses need your support now more than ever. So please, please give them your trade if you are able to do so. So for my sales pitch, I suspect some of you may be thinking about getting some beers in to see you through the next few weeks. I work with Cloudwater Bruco, who are an amazing brewery based in Manchester. We make some of the best beers in the UK. We also make delicious sodas using ingredients from the brewery for anyone who isn't drinking, so we've got an option for you as well. You can order online with us by going to shop.cloudwaterbrew.co. Orders over £35 receive free delivery, and orders over £100 for the ballers get a 10% discount. I hope no one is getting too lonely if you are self-isolating, and I am genuinely very well practiced in it, so do give me a shout if you need a pep talk. Other than that, do your press-ups and I'll see you on the other side. Fuck you, buddies.
If you are the one that likes running for fun, the one for you, the caffeine bullet chew. You want to run faster or PB your ride? It's easy for you with caffeine bullet chew. So much caffeine in one mint chew. The one for you, the caffeine bullet chew. If you want to run faster, win a race or two, get a PB this season with caffeine bullet chew. With caffeine bullet chew. If you still haven't tried Caffeine Bullet, get 25% off now at caffeinebullet.com using code FYB.
They're bad, they're boys, and occasionally they talk about running. Yes, it's the Bad Boy Running Podcast with your hosts, Jody Rainsford and David Heller. Come back, baby, come back.
Bye, 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 bye. I must admit I was a clown to be messing around, but that doesn't mean that you have to leave town.
Hey! Hello, David Hellard.
Hey, Jody Rainsford, you're alive.
I'm alive. I'm here. I'm not dead. I haven't, and it wasn't even coronavirus. That's the thing.
Yeah, imagine how you're going to be when that hits.
Oh my goodness. Oh, it's going to be, it wasn't even the flu. I just had a cold. I just had a really bad cold for 2 weeks. A really, 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 really bad cold. But the thing is, I tell you what, being ill is not like it used to be.
Oh, yeah.
When you were ill, you were allowed to be ill. You could just be ill. And this is what I picture with being ill. Lying on the sofa with a blanket on you, watching TV. That is ill to me. That is the enjoyment.
Ice cream and soup.
You have ice cream. Absolutely soup. And again, I don't know whether we mentioned this before because I seem to be talking about it a lot. Lucozade was in a wrapper.
I mean, you were given Lucozade when you were ill.
They made it into some medicinal thing, didn't they? They used to put it in this wrapper and you'd get it in the. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm amazed that social services weren't involved in this.
Come on, everyone did this. Everyone did this. Don't pretend that you're not old enough to remember this. When you got it in it was specially wrapped up in Lucozade coloured cellophane.
Okay, I mean, I'd never really drunk Lucozade when I was younger, to be honest. So, yeah, it's not the wrapper that I'm being confused by. It's more the fact
Okay, that was the thing, right? The history of Lucozade. You don't see, this is it. This is educational. Created as Glucozade in the UK in 1927 by Newcastle pharmacist William Walker Hunter, it was acquired by the British pharmaceutical company Beecham's in 1938 and sold as Lucozade, an energy drink for the sick. And that is pretty much how it was marketed all the way up until about 25 years ago.
Wow, so you used to be...
Imagine that, like, you would basically... And it's not even Lucozade Sport. Like, actually, Lucozade, because you get it at the pharmacist. And people would bring it to you when you were ill. And so you drink, like, pure fucking glucose in order to aid recovery. Because a pharmaceutical company said so.
Wow, I mean, I know Coca-Cola was a brain tonic when it started. So I guess this, if only we could market like that now. Caffeine bullet, the pill that gives you the horn, something like that. I mean, if you're allowed to just choose anything. But anyway, how are you now? Are you back in training for your Ironman?
I'm not back in training because I've been for a week skiing.
Ah, okay. So is the plan on, have you got a plan for when you're going to get ready for the Ironman distances?
There's a few questions I need to ask about this. Is it an Ironman or is it Ironman distance?
I think Ironman distance is acceptable.
Do you think so?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's... We're not one for brands, are we?
No, we're not.
Yeah, I think it's fine to do the distance, especially as it's quite hard to find one that's not potentially sold out. Although I have discovered a triathlon that I thought you might enjoy. The Alp d'Huez Triathlon.
Alp d'Huez. Sounds very, very, that sounds really hard.
But, I mean, you need to challenge yourself if you're going to take on an Ironman. And this would be perfect training. So, Alp d'Huez...
It's not. It's just a triathlon. It's just a
triathlon, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, how about it?
Oh, no. I'm not just going to say yes right now to doing anything.
Okay, well, I'll send it through to you.
You're somehow tricking me. I know you are. There's something. Go on. What is it? What is there about it? Is it like the hardest triathlon on the planet, or something, or is it the rainiest, or the?
No, I mean, I think it's probably lovely weather.
Shut up! I can see your face. Your face is not even.
I mean, Alp d'Huez is known as a great climb in the Alps. So I love the idea of making a triathlon out of it. So what are you messaging through to me, by the way?
I'm messaging through to you Lucozaid adverts.
But and so you have you got something in mind then for if you're not going to do the Ironman?
I've got a couple of things in mind.
Okay.
I'm not entirely sure yet. Mainly because I've just not been very well. So I just thinking I'm not going to book anything. Also, now the coronavirus thing is on, I'm really reluctant to book stuff. Or I might wait till people start dropping out of stuff and then booking it.
Clever. Yeah, that makes sense. And the good thing is, cycling is a solitary sport, so you can train by yourself quite easily.
Oh, I'm not going to do cycling. I'm not going to do any cycling races. I was talking to Deepor about this today, and he said, are you going to do any triathlons before the Ironman? And I said... I don't know. I like the idea of my first triathlon being an Ironman.
I like that as well. I mean, I'm happy for that to be the situation if you feel that that's the right decision.
It's worked for me before, especially with the nuts. That worked well, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is the equivalent of your first running race being the Marathon de Sable. And for a lot of people, that is the case. So, yeah. And actually, talking about Marathon de Sable, have you heard it's been cancelled?
Yes, everything's been cancelled. I like the way everything's been put back to autumn. All these autumn races are going, what the fuck? What? All our money's going because everyone's putting their races back to autumn.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some busy weekends in September. That's for sure. But it's brutal. If you've been training for 6 months, 8 months, to then find out 3 weeks out, but I don't know what else they can do. So, it's quite hard because people have been, even things like the Japanese marathon, people are saying Tokyo Marathon, not getting refunds for that, only running the elites. And you've got to wonder about London as well. Paris has been cancelled already.
It's a good model, isn't it? You basically fill up a city marathon with like expensive entries and then you go, oh, you can't do it because of coronavirus, which means that we're not giving you your money back because it's under like force majeure clause. We can't give you your money back. So we're going to keep it, but we're still going to run the race with the elites in it. It's a good business model.
Yeah, and it's a shame. Well, we we've spoken to Danny, who will be airing that in a few weeks' time, who's from the Abbott World Majors. So he doesn't get the decision making in that. But yeah,
Backlash.
Yeah, when we were talking to him, he was having to respond at the time because they just announced that Tokyo was being cancelled. And yeah, it's incredibly harsh for people who, I think the trouble with things like the MDS and those races is that people have spent thousands of pounds on them as well. And those people are probably still going to travel to Japan and just not do the race, or do the race when you're not there. And I know they've said for London that that's one of the fears, that if they do cancel London, they're still going to have.
People are going to still turn up and run it. They will. Yeah. They will.
Yeah, 100%. And there's going to be some guy who's selling a medal for £5 online.
Yeah.
And then selling a virtual medal for London. And so it'd be really interesting to see how it pans out. One thing they have done, though, did you see the announcement about the back of the pack? What London are planning?
Yeah. What do you think of that, then?
Unbelievable. I mean, I think they've absolutely knocked it out of the park. And the amount
It's been mixed online, hasn't it? I would say. I don't think it's been widely... people have widely thought that's great.
Yeah, but the people who haven't thought it's great are genuinely dickheads. So
I was going to say, in our group, it seemed to be 50-50.
Oh, did it? It's because I was in the I was a runner, which is a Facebook group, which is very it's full of people yearning for yesteryear, who are looking for any opportunity to reinforce that they're better than
how elite they are. Yeah,
exactly. But I mean, I thought London when they, because I do feel sorry for London at times, that if anything goes slightly wrong, then people are really ready to just try and bring its name down and suggest that this had been, anything negative is always planned or is always this conspiracy. And last year, when they did have those runners at the back of the pack, people forgot that London's got the most generous cutoff times of any of the majors. And it was the contractors who were being dicks. And it was just really unfortunate. These things had all conspired. So this year, I think it's amazing. Claire and I, because I'm injured, we've asked if we can be part of the 80 angels at the back who are going to partying all the way around. And I just think having a DJ there, so good, so fun. And if you're going to say to people that it's acceptable, why not go fully out? And as you said, there is quite a bit of negativity from some quarters, but those people, I think, are just... they're annoyed that they haven't got a London Marathon place, and they want to be able to, they want to beat down on slower runners, thinking that if these slower runners aren't there, they'd be able to run. And that's just not the case.
Yeah. It does seem like that.
And so I think it's a great thing. And especially as the more people we get at the back of the race, the more people that do the London Marathon, and there's no space in the middle of the runners. So the one thing I would question, they have said that if you're not going to make the cutoff time, that you should start in one of the waves higher up. Which, ooh, I understand why they're doing that. I just find the exact. I think it might even be wave two, but the trouble is, my main worry when I've been pacing and having to get a group through, because all the starts do start at different times now, and you can potentially be kind of 10 minutes behind if you're in the red start to the blue or the green. And so if we're having these people who are tail walkers too far up the field, it only takes two people to be running next to each other to completely shut down the area from, let's say, Maze Hill, the second quarter. Yeah. From Maze Hill, when you walk, you start the marathon in your two, three different pens, and you all then combine on the straight that goes from Maze Hill all the way along to Tower. And that becomes very narrow. And pacing along there with a group of people, if there are two people who happen to be running together at a slow pace, no one can get by, let alone a big group of So my fear is that the people who are more likely to be the tail walkers are probably more likely to be talking to people or to be with a buddy, and that could cause utter chaos for everyone behind them. So I don't know what you can do about that. You could potentially, maybe they actually have to explicitly message people and let them know that this could be a problem. But that's when we could, I think, see a real fallout if suddenly it's causing all these pressure points. I can imagine some runners who already can be quite terse and selfish when they're running their own marathon really losing it if that happens. But yeah, we'll see. Hopefully it's just going to be a brilliant celebration at the back, so fingers crossed. But have you seen the controversy to do with Mr. Farah?
No, it's always a weekly one. Or is it one from a while back that we just haven't talked about?
Well, there's one from a while back we haven't talked about. Firstly, we haven't talked about the fact that Barry Fudge is involved, who I think is the most delightful name possible.
What?
So,
who's Barry Fudge?
Barry Fudge is made.
It sounds like one of your alter egos. It sounds like you were on a TV program in your teens or whatever, and you played Barry Fudge or something like that. Yeah.
I thought Barry Fudge was one of the Chuckle Brothers, to be honest. It sounds like a similar name. But yeah, firstly, that he's involved, but Mo coming out and then saying.
Mo coming out? What?
Mo.
What? That is a shock. But that's nothing. Yeah, we should be celebrating that.
That wouldn't surprise me if he was resorting to those tactics of distraction. But coming out and saying, accusing the press of that he's being attacked potentially because he's black, and that maybe it's racism is why everyone thinks he's doping.
Oh, really? Has he said that?
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy. Really? Nothing to do with the fact that you've had transformative years when you've been training with people who are known to be drug cheats. It's not the fact that you've stood by the coaches even when they've been shown to be drug cheats until you're absolutely cornered on it. It's nothing to do with the fact that you haven't answered your door and people have been round to try and test you even though they've been ringing the door for an hour. And it's nothing to do with the fact that you've been having these dodgy injections that have been shipped in from Switzerland that you managed to forget, and then suddenly when you're actually cornered with the data, you suddenly remember, oh yes, I did have those 4 days before the London Marathon. Yeah, it's nothing to do with that because of racism. What I'd love to understand is how Joe Public sees this and whether they now believe, yeah, he probably is not as clean as we'd hoped, or whether they're still happy to believe his story in the same way Lance Armstrong, people would just refuse to believe that anything was wrong until there was undeniable proof. But there's another doper being caught.
What? Go on. Who?
Steeplechase gold medalist. So, and I've been thinking about this and I've realized I don't like dopers, but I like cheaters.
It almost sounds like a reggae song.
I don't like dopers. Yo, yo.
I love cheaters.
So it's Jebbet was disqualified. But I've realised when you get a doper, there's no fun in that. They've doped and they get suspended. But when you get a cheater, you get to hear the story and how they've done it and all the intricate detail behind it. And actually, there's some material in that.
You love a story, that's the thing. I just love a story. I love the soap opera aspect of it.
Yeah, or just the thought that goes into it and the kind of the audacity that I think cheating gets over doping. But yeah, another one bites the dust as such.
Did you see also that long predicted of being a doper? Sun Yang, the Chinese swimmer.
I haven't seen that.
Got an eight-year ban.
Ooh.
And I don't know if you ever remember, his behaviour was absolutely shocking because I think the British swimmer and the Australian swimmers wouldn't podium with him, knowing he was a cheater and stuff. And there's a video of him winning his gold medal. And while he's getting his gold medal, he's shouting abuse at the the British guy. For not being on the podium with him, and he's been a right cocky twat with it as well. And then as they're walking out, the camera's got him and everything. And he's just saying to this guy, "You're a loser. I'm a winner." You know, like, it's just incredible. And now he's been found of, you know, that he's, of course, a drug cheat and that they'd long suspected. One of those ones where, you know, he smashed files and all sorts of stuff, you know, that you do if you're completely innocent.
Yeah. And it's just a shame that it seems to be just so prevalent now. And we're coming up to the next Olympics, and will it even happen with the corona outbreak? And if it does, I mean, I'm losing my interest day to day in athletics now, and even math and running, and it just, I mean, it's just too many cheats. Not enough cheats.
Too many dopers.
Too many dopers.
But it's doping. Doping is almost cheating. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, if you're going to cheat, I like the people that cheat by, like, twins with one of them hiding in a toilet or hopping on a bike or, you know, cheating that requires some element of doing a bit of doping. That is cheating. That's like there's something so pathetic about it.
Yeah, it's the lazy man's cheating.
It's the lazy man's cheating. Yeah, exactly.
But one thing that did get me quite interested that I hadn't realised because I hadn't been in the news round cycle 4 years ago looking in the same way, that we are so different to the States is the way we qualify for our Olympics.
Right.
So there's massive hype in Runners World and quite a few other forums to do with the marathon trials in the States, where I remember in years gone by there has been controversy of, because you have to actually qualify by coming first, second, third, fourth, depending on how many lads qualify for your country in your race. So in the UK, we select the UK Athletics selects who's going to represent us. Normally that's going to be your fastest people, but say someone's coming back from injury or if someone false started during the UK, the British trials, they'll give them a bye and they'll let them through anyway. In America, that doesn't happen. So quite often you've had times where the best athletes in the world aren't at the Olympics because they just messed up one race or they were ill or something unfortunate happened and their rules are rigid. So their marathon, it's probably up there as one of the most watched marathons in North America.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and even before the race, there was probably 3 or 4 months of articles in Runner's World talking about different people who'd qualified, normally with a headline of like how Boston's blah, 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 still eats pancakes and yet is going to destroy the blah, 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 blah. And so actually there's this whole build up to the race that we never get. I mean, no one really knows British marathon runners.
No, not
outside Mo, Callum, and let alone 20, 30, 40, 50. And I think there are up to 300 people running in their trials.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they were all offered a free pair of Nikes.
Really?
Yeah. So really interesting. I mean, great move by Nike. Not even the next percent, but their new ones. They're called the Alpha Fly. And within hours of the finish, some of them were on sale for $1,000 on eBay.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible. Amazing.
But I mean, that's a race that you want to see where you're genuinely the best in your country, where you know someone from your country is going to win, and just seeing them all try and peak for the one race and slog it out.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's a shame we don't have that in the UK, because I'd love to see who the top 10 marathon runners are and how they approach it and, you know, where the strength and depth is and if there's different tactics. But we're never going to get that opportunity, sadly. And the closest thing we'll have will be someone like the London Marathon, where the field's so diluted with better runners that we never really get a sense of that inter-country competition. But talking about from great races to bad races, there's a route that I think is possibly the worst half marathon route I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
I can't figure out how to, I'm going to see. So do better. If you're at a computer, Google London half, lucasaid.com and then look at the course map. It is genuinely incredible.
londonhalf.com. Is it one of those ones that avoids every major?
So it's all set.
It's postponed.
Has it been postponed?
Yeah.
No.
It says a London half marathon at Queen Elizabeth Park postponed.
Well, the course map is still up. Have a quick look to see what it's like.
Okay, let's have a look. Let's have a look. Come on, where is it?
So,
that's the map.
I think it's under event info.
Oh yeah, course map.
Now the whole course is set within the Olympic Park.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
So it's set within the Olympic Park, and they've somehow made that decision that it's a good idea to cram 13.1 miles into an area that has no right hosting a half marathon.
Oh my god, that's gonna... there's gonna be so many people running in different directions. How are they gonna sign that?
Yeah. So if you're listening at home and haven't got the opportunity, it is like a maze, except there are lots of double backs. There's loops, there's crossovers. Some of them are crossing over in like four directions.
There's going to be some amazing cheating at this, isn't there? There's going to be like people running like 20-minute half marathons. This is insane.
Especially as I think they'll be doing that without even realizing they're necessarily cheating. I think it'd be very easy to run.
It'd be hard to not cheat. I mean, like there's some where the arrows... There's one particular stretch that there's three arrows. Three arrows all going in different directions. I mean, that's insane. Like that, you run along that bit three times. I mean, they're not going to separate that out.
How? Yeah.
What?
Unbelievable. And I mean, I'm pleased it's been postponed because I'd like to do it now just to cause havoc. We should go there wearing backwards t-shirts and just hide loads of disguises in the bushes and just see how much fun we can have getting lost, essentially, or making tactical decisions on our route, because some of it makes no sense at all. But I think that possibly is the best half marathon / worst half marathon route I've ever seen.
Oh, it's so... the thing, what's the point? There's no point in this map, really, is there?
Yeah, I mean, what's the point of this map?
Because you're not going to remember. This must need an incredible amount of signposting.
Yeah,
for it to make any sense. I mean, yeah. It just looks so complicated.
And the times are going to be so slow.
And there's so many double... This is literally like when I was running around Hayward Heath. It's like running down a bunch of cul-de-sacs.
Do you think that's what they're trying to do?
Yeah, exactly. Recreate Hayward Heath race. Oh, my God. It's so... I don't understand how they can have so many... There's so many arrows pointing in totally the opposite directions.
Yeah, and maybe they've just decided it's cheaper to do it like this than to have to close any roads or to get permission. And I assume it's the first year they've done it, because there's no way this is going to happen for a second year.
That is insane. The amount of money they must be spending on signage in order for that not... How many people are supposed to be running it?
You'll probably get a sign each to take home with you.
I mean, it's insane. That is brilliant. They're literally running on every single path in that park twice.
Yeah, sometimes three times.
Sometimes, I mean, like there's one bit where there's not even a path there. You're just going over a corner of a field to make up a distance. Can you see it? It's just utterly insane. It says Knightsbridge. There, you just created a triangle of running that it doesn't need to be that. I'm going to run here, but just run over there. I'll come back a bit.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah, that's right.
And then the other bit, you're running just through. You run one side of the field. You run the other side of the field. Wait a minute, there's still some space down the middle of the field. We'll run down the middle of the field as well.
And I like it when there's two arrows where the arrows are pointing directly at each other.
Yeah, which happens. Which happens in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 places.
Right, we've got to enter this so we know when it's happening, just so we can film it, if anything. And all go down wearing those massive inflatable fat suits that no one can pass you.
Yeah.
Only £36, so actually that is worth buying a ticket just for shits and giggles.
There's no way that is gonna be the right distance either.
And it's sponsored by On. What are you doing, On? Wow. Caffeine Bullet sponsored their first event.
Oh really?
And sorry, half marathon.
Oh, I can't. People were saying they loved seeing you and all that sort of stuff, all those sort of gubbings. Oh yeah, it was lovely meeting David Hellard. Oh, it's nice to meet him. Oh, I got PB and I met him as well. It was nice.
It was great. We turned up at mile nine, handed out free bullets, and
you started the race at mile nine. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. But I've got cuts on my hands because people grab very aggressively when they're running by. But the unfortunate thing is, because it was pretty cold, the chews were quite hard. And so we gave out around 1,000 chews, I'd say, to people. But in the next 30, 40 meters, there were probably about 60 chews that had been spat out with people who really... really weren't big fans of it, shall we say. So we still got, 960 people that...
I hope you recycled.
it's where Corona started.
Secondhand bullets.
Yeah, absolutely. They will kill you. But really interesting, actually, being involved in a race and seeing everyone from start to finish. And the one thing that really amazed me, at the end... because they've got to clean the streets so quickly and get the roads back running again, if you're the back runner, you have two vans behind you and people clearing, and the amount of pressure that must be on you from that is really high.
Yeah.
Because you'd expect at the back, you'd maybe have one person on a bike, one person kind of a bit positivity. But this, you really would feel bad walking, and really interesting. I guess they've got to do it that way. I don't know if I guess that's what happened with London as well, isn't it? They had the machines at the back,
yeah,
trying to push people on. But it's also amazing how different the paces of people at the back were. There's huge gaps between runners, which I didn't think there would be. I thought they would be closer together, but I think there's just so few people running at the back of races compared to everywhere else.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. I just think you've got such density in numbers from your kind of 115 through, and then towards the end, there's just very, very few, which is a shame, actually. Should we crack on with our guest for the evening?
Yes, yeah. Let's not say who it is. Let's leave that for your other introduction.
Yeah, exactly, because that's always good.
That's always good, is it? We cover up a multitude of sins by doing that.
Indeed. Take it away, Nick. So, Do Badders, I think we've mentioned we're going to have this guest a while back because we met them at the National Running Show. Now, it's not often that we interview the kind of the behind the scenes people in running, that I guess what you call the little people in running.
Little people. Hold on a second now.
What an intro.
The only reason Camille's breaking all his world records is because of me. I wouldn't call it little people. What the hell?
I'm done.
The quickest interview ever.
Well, I guess that's our intro, people. It's kind of whole coach and manager and husband of Camille Heron and amazing Then right. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's just after 2 o'clock here in sunny Colorado, and we're up here enjoying our day. We I was waiting on your phone call. I was just watching that press conference that Trump gave, and I gave up after 5 minutes watching that. So yeah, so this is a good, this is a nice added distraction here, you know. So,
I don't know who to get more sense from a Trump press conference to an interview.
There's nothing coming out of that. So I think
just as much science involved in our discussion. So.
Right.
Absolutely. Fake tan, that's the only difference.
That's right.
So how are you finding Colorado? Have you settled in now?
Yeah, we bought the house here about 2018, June of 2018, but we were still working full-time jobs in Oklahoma then. And so we were just using it for training. We'd come up every few months for a few weeks because it's at like, you know, we're nearly at 8,000 feet here. So, but we decided after her last cycle went so well, getting ready for the World Championships in Albi, that we decided, feck it, let's just move here permanently. So we're just, our house is under contract now in Oklahoma. That's good. And it's hopefully be sold here pretty soon. And I have a painter in the other room right now because we're doing all these massive renovations to the house because the house was built in the 1950s. So it was like walking into a 1960s home when we first moved in here. So we're getting all these renovations done. So we're working. We did the first stage, which was basically the kitchen and our living room, wood floors and a brand new kitchen. And now we're working on the on all the other rooms on the other side of the house. We're getting them painted and updated, wood floors and everything. So yeah, so we have a painter in the house right now painting away. Yeah,
so that's actually one of the oldest houses in America.
When you said you have a painter in the house, I thought you meant that we're going to paint an incredible portrait of Camille standing on the bodies of beaten ultra runners or something like that. Just an incredible lifestyle portrait.
We do have a
good idea. Yeah. Now that's come up.
We do have a nice portrait of our winning comrades that was done by one of our friends back in Oklahoma. It's a beautiful
running
portrait
over the bodies of ultra runners.
Yeah, that's right. No, but now this guy is a real painter. He's actually painting walls right now, so it's good. Yeah, so but no, we like you know, it's a small town here, just about 8,000 people, 9,000 people. It's a small college town. Adams State University is just our back wall actually backs up to the university, and it's a small little college, a Division II powerhouse. They've won every national title for the last 20 plus years in cross country, and you know, they'd probably give any Division I team a good run for their money too. But so it's a nice blue collar type town here, you know, just hard working people, and it's a nice town to kind of call home right now. Yeah. So
and is Colorado is a place to live as a runner, as expect it? Like, does it live up to the hype?
It's like, you know, you go, like, literally, you know, Camille just took off to go for a run there. It's like 80, 90 seconds, and then she's on trail, you know, right away. And it's like dirt roads until the cows come home, basically. Yeah, there's tons of stuff here. You know, she could run from here to here all the way to the sand dunes, which is a pretty popular spot here, and it's all dirt roads the whole way, and it's 20 plus miles. Yeah, so it's great. Yeah.
Does that give you any challenges as a coach trying to get it? Because obviously trying to mix up flats and hilly, is it all
no.
hilly, and is that,
you know, we'd looked at when we were wanting to move, because we were in flat Oklahoma and it was all concrete. We felt the next stage in our running career, it would be like to get on a little bit more softer surfaces and more kind of variability in our training. So we kind of looked at Boulder, we looked at Flagstaff, and then obviously we both trained here at some point in our running career. So we just felt like this was the spot. You know, it's flat here, it's in a valley, but you go 20 minutes and you're in mountains. You know, it's like Mount Blanca is like, it's a 14,000 footer, you know, so, and there's rolling hills all the way to that. And then, you know, she's went and ran some trails on there. She's doing a bit of exploring right now, and she's running with a friend of ours that's a pretty good mountain runner. So she's getting on some technical stuff too, which is good. And that's about a 30-minute drive from here. So yeah, so we get a lot of variety here, you know. It's kind of spoiled, to be honest, you know. So yeah, so
taking you back then, because you mentioned obviously you've got a bit of a running history yourself before you met Camille. So
I wouldn't say I'm anything to the ability what Camille has done, but I did a bit of running in my background, all right, yeah, a little bit, yeah. So
because what brought you to, have you always run then your whole life? Or,
you know, I was a swimmer growing up. I swam for a few years, and then I got challenged when I was in secondary school. I got challenged in the local sports day to run a mile, and I trained for like a week and I won the mile. And I kind of took it from there. I joined a little local athletic club, and just started running a lot. And I was fortunate. My dad was my coach, and he kind of was learning along the way as I took up the sport. And and then I just, you know, won a few national titles and underage.
Wow.
And, yeah,
that's
underage.
A bit of a jump there.
Yeah.
Did a bit of running, and then I won a few national titles. Just slip that in.
You know, I represented Ireland at the world junior level, that kind of stuff. No, I think the swimming background probably helped me. I think having that a good aerobic ability helped, and and running, Irish kids, they love playing soccer, and grew up playing soccer and Gaelic football, and so running was just a natural progression for me. It was just something I enjoyed doing, and I wasn't very good academically, so I thought running around fields would be a lot more fun than sitting in a classroom. So I enjoyed that, and like I said, I won a few national titles, and then I got recruited to go to the States on a running scholarship. Yeah, so.
And how does that work? Is that something that when you become a good enough runner, people at the national level will start talking to you? Or are there people in the States who are going to chat to every national champion at a certain age across the world?
So basically how it works is I was recruited. I was at the World Junior Track and Field Championships, and I was approached by a college coach. And that's typically, fast forward, I've done the whole collegiate coaching myself, so I kind of know how recruiting works, but typically coaches will go to a world championship or a world cross country or in this day and age, because the internet's so great, the power of 10, obviously, you can see, athletes on there that you'd like to recruit. So, it's easy to get in touch with clubs and stuff. But no, I was recruited at the World Junior Track and Field Championships I got recruited by a few colleges and ended up going to the University of Oklahoma. And it's a pretty easy process. You just have to take your SAT. It's kind of like a scholastic exam that you have to take to see that you're not retarded and stupid, things like that, and that you can actually English and math and those kind of things. And then that combined with your leaving cert, or in your case, the A levels, I believe. Or is it the O levels? Which is it? The A levels or the O levels?
A levels.
So you kind of combined with that gives you kind of an overall score, and most Division I colleges now, back when I was in running was the early 90s, they didn't have the clearinghouse that they have now. It's the NC2A clearinghouse, so it's a little harder now. You have to go through all these procedures on that side of things, but it's not that stressful if you kind of know what you're doing, and there's good help these days with to do all that.
What do they offer though? Because I know we hear a lot about how the cost of tuition is
free beer every weekend. Beer until the cows come home. That's what you get now. Burgers and beer and fish and chips on the weekend. No, it just depends on where you go and what kind of, how good you are, basically. Yeah. And typically with international kids, they get like a lot of scholarships. So you get your tuition and your room and board and paid. And then you typically have to kind of come up with they can't pay for your flights. And typically a lot of colleges now, they don't pay for books. So you kind of have to pay your own books. But I was fortunate, I ended up going to University of Oklahoma. It was a good experience for me. Yeah, I had a pretty good scholarship.
And as a scholar there, are you held up by the other students? Are there many of you? Are you put on a pedestal? Are you better than the other runners? Or
you kind of have to, being a full scholarship or nearly a full scholarship athlete, there's a lot of expectations. So you kind of have to, deliver the goods, as they say, So it's, and I kind of think back on my running years, my first year there, I was kind of a bit homesick and a little injured going into the college. And I wasn't that good starting out. And I had a feeling that they were going to send me packing before the end of the first year. But I pulled things around and ended up running pretty well. But it can be stressful if you don't kind of know all the things going in. So you kind of have to do your homework, kind of find out who the good colleges are and the good coaches and people that aren't going to like burn you if you're injured and those kind of things. Because typically scholarships are, it's a contract you're going to sign, and it's like an employer, like anything else. If you don't show up to work, you'll get the boot, right? So it's the same with running. If you don't produce results, you probably might get a reduction in your scholarship, or but there's a lot of levels to that, a lot of steps. So you just kind of have to do your homework if you're looking at colleges and those kind of things, and kind of know where you want to go and those kind of things.
For people that don't, so just to give an idea really of what that kind of obligation looks like on a kind of day-by-day basis, what kind of stuff does that mean that you have to do?
Yeah, so you obviously have to go to class. You have to go to class every day to make sure that you're staying. You kind of look at it as two things. You kind of have to be eligible to run for the college at the national championships or in the conference level, but then you also have to be eligible within the college too. So if you're not going to class, you're going to fail your classes. And there's a lot of classes now that have mandatory attendance. So you kind of have to go to class and make sure you're taking care of your schoolwork and those kind of things. And it's every college, it's either a quarter system or a semester system. And typically you have to take so many courses each semester or each quarter, and you have a grade point average you have to maintain. Typically it's a 2.0, which is a C plus average. So you kind of have to maintain that average. And if you don't, if you fall below that, then you can be what's called academically ineligible. And then you can't compete for the college. And a lot of times colleges will kind of, you know, if they're giving you a large scholarship, you know, it's not a good thing, you know. So you have to go to class, and then you have to go to practice every day, training. You have to train with the team, and then you just have to be a good role model and those kind of things. You just kind of have to hold up your end of the bargain, basically. And then when it comes to competition, you kind of have to do well. Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, it's a 4-year commitment. Obviously, a lot of colleges give you. In my case, it was a 5-year commitment because I was redshirted my junior year, my third year, which means I had an injury and I was redshirted, which means they give you an extra year of eligibility, they give you an extra year of competition. So because if you're a good runner, they want to keep you around so you can, you know, those kind of things. But
what happens to your studies if you have an extra year then? Do you just get to retake?
No, you just extend it. You know, in my case, I just slow things down. Typically, you get your degree in 4 years, but if they give you a fifth year of eligibility or a fifth year of competition, then you just slow things down. You just don't take as many courses. So it just spreads out over 5 years instead of 4 years.
So that sounds like a dream.
Yeah, it was. It was a holiday. I kind of stretched it out too. I did like 5.5 years, you know. So I took my time. I was in no rush to go get a job and that kind of stuff and be responsible and society, you know. So
and what do competitions look like at a collegiate level? Is it every week? Is it interstate? Is it are there levels you have to qualify through? Or
so typically I ran a Division One, so the competition, it's typically in cross country, runs from the end of August to the middle of November. Your championships, your national championships, are in November. Then you have a break until about January, then you have your indoor track season from January to mid-March, which are national championships being in mid-March. And then your outdoor track season starts right after that, and that runs all the way through mid-June. So it's, if you're a full scholarship athlete, you're kind of expected to do well in all three seasons. Now, that's kind of tough, you know. So a lot of colleges, and that's why I kind of go back to, you know, doing your homework. Look for colleges that kind of focus more on a kind of a cross-country or outdoor season. They don't worry too much about the indoor season. Whereas a lot of schools up the Northeast, they focus a lot more on the east side of the states. They focus a lot more on the indoor season, whereas the Midwest and the West Coast, and, you know, they focus more on cross-country and outdoor track. So it kind of just depends on what you're looking for. And some athletes kind of like the ongoing competition. And I never really liked indoor track, so I kind of took a back seat. I was kind of more like a cross-country and outdoor track kind of guy. So, and I was just fortunate that I ran pretty well I ran pretty well in all three seasons, you know. So yeah. So
and is there an expectation for you to also be representing Ireland on a national
No, not really. I think you're representing your college because you have a contract with your college, so they don't really but I think if it comes along that you have an opportunity to represent your country at an international level, I don't think they're gonna say no to it. You know, I think you kind of look at here, Adams State University, they've 3 Irish girls on the team right now, and they went 1, 2, 3 at the national cross country championships. Division 2, and they're really good runners, and they all represented Ireland at the under 23s Europeans. One of them got a silver medal, or was it bronze? It was either the bronze or the silver she got. So it's, you know, it just depends. It kind of brings prestige to the college, because then the college coach can kind of go recruit in those kind of competitions, say, hey, I have these athletes that competed for my college, and then they represented their country at the European championship. Yeah. So,
and does it lead to something typically at the end of? Because I know you
lead to you getting a job. Get your crop together and get a job and figure out what you're going to do with the rest of your life. So at least.
But will it open doors if you've had a successful cross country and track season versus just getting a degree?
I think it does, especially if you're on the higher end of things. You can get it opens up doors to kind of getting sponsorships and those kind of things. But, you know, as we know, as my own experiences with Camille, sponsorships are hard and few to come by, you know, and when you get one, you're happy to get one. So, you know, you kind of have to be grateful if you can get anything, to be honest, you know. So, because, you know, sponsorships these days are probably a little bit different than they were back in the 90s. There's a lot more social media aspect to it. You know, you kind of have to represent your brand both socially on the social media side and also, you know, basically representing while you're competing too. So it's one of those things where I think a lot of times a lot of athletes kind of don't understand how it works, and so they kind of, you know, they think they're going to get some kind of a sponsorship deal once they're done with their collegiate running, but it doesn't work out like that, you know. So you know, they're going to have to get a job. So.
So did you go straight into coaching then afterwards? Was there a period?
I was fortunate that, you know, I had a degree in music. Played the piano and I sang in college, and I was a bit of an entertainer, you could say, you know, the fraternity houses and the sorority houses on the weekend.
You've been around there long songs.
Enough. What was that?
You've been around there long enough.
I know, right?
So. What's your go-to tune if you're in an Irish pub and there's a piano in the corner and everyone's crying out for a sing-song? What are you going
to
play?
You know, anything Billy Joel. Piano Man is always a good one to, yeah, everyone knows Billy Joel, you know, so... So that was always one of my favorites. But now I was fortunate. My folks, great people, and my mom was always the kind of, hey, if you ever fell in bad times, you can always sit down at a piano and play away, and someone will give you a bit of money. Sure enough, I did that for a little bit too. So yeah. So, but
so you're essentially a homeless busker for a few.
Yeah, basically, yeah. You can put that. That's on my resume. I think somewhere. Did all that at one point, you know. So, but no. I have a degree. Music. So I actually taught public schools. I taught at the high school level. I was fortunate when I got done with college, I had got the green card, the work visa. I got one of them when I was in college through the visa lottery system. I was able to get a green card because a lot of times when kids go over here on scholarships, they come on what's called an F1 student visa, and they're typically 5 or 6 years long. But I was fortunate I had a green card, and so I had a work visa. And so I basically just went from running in college to working after college. I was able to get a job. I taught public schools for a few years, and then right when I met Camille, I had applied for my U.S. citizenship in 2001, and I was actually in the process of getting my U.S. citizenship when I met Camille. So it kind of worked out. Yeah, when we were first started dating, I kind of went through the U.S. citizenship deal. Yeah. So
and during that time, were you still wanting to be professional runner? Was it still a big part of your life?
Yeah, you know, running was a bit, and it still is a big part of my life, but at that point I kind of realized, I realized I'm never gonna, you know, make an Olympic team or those kind of things. So I kind of have to get on here and figure out what I want to do. So I taught public schools for a few years, and I just could never get used to wiping kids' noses at 8 o'clock in the morning. So I just, because I taught elementary school too, so I wanted to kind of do something with athletics, and it was kind of fortunate when I started coaching Camille. I was like, well, maybe I should become a college coach. So we had just moved out to Oregon. Camille was doing her master's out at Oregon State, and I started as a volunteer coach with the Oregon State track and field program. And then from there, my blossoming college career took off. Yeah, so yeah. So
and just stepping back, how did you first meet Camille then?
Met at a jazz festival. I was hammered as anything, and Miss Oklahoma, and I wasn't getting anything with that.
Miss Oklahoma.
Yeah. I mean, the Irish guys will always go for the top. They ain't gonna mess around with any slappers. I mean, anywhere they're gonna go right for the best looking woman. And Camille had to show up at this point. State? Having said that.
Is Oklahoma a good state if California's like near the top and Rhode Island's near the bottom? I mean,
it's in the Midwest. It's Tornado Alley. So if you're hanging around in March, April, or May, you might see a tornado.
So would Miss Oklahoma be like someone to tell the friends about? Or
she's a good-looking woman. Okay. Oh, yeah. Like I said, you know, I'm not going to... So I'd met Camille hadn't shown up at that point, and I was just chatting away and talking with her and the Miss Oklahoma, and I wasn't getting anywhere there. And then I turned around the corner and Camille just showed up. She was there and she was smiling and had a good old smile on her face. So, hello, hello, hello. So I wandered over to her, I slumbered over to her. We hung out that night. And then the next day, I'd forgot we'd exchanged numbers I told her I'd take her out on a date. And I forgot completely about it, obviously, because I was two sheets to the wind. And so she ended up...
Were you hoping it was Miss Oklahoma's number?
Yeah, probably. Well, in the end, you know, you got to think about it. Camille is Miss Oklahoma, you know, so it worked out in the end. So, but yeah, she called me up the next day and said, listen, we got a date, and where are you taking me tonight? And I was like, who are you now again? So it worked out in the end, yeah. But the cool thing a lot of people don't know is I'm actually nearly 10 years older than Camille. Camille was 19 and I was 29 at the time when we met. So yeah.
Cool. I mean, yeah. Rixie's a similar age under, but I was 10 years older. So
right. There you go.
Yeah. Wowzers. And, yeah. Do you think your connection to begin with was because of the commonality of running, or were you?
She knew who I was, yeah, because I'd done obviously well at Oklahoma. My sister was at school there, and Camille actually knew my sister pretty well, so she kind of knew the name, and we had actually met a few years before that. I was we were organizing a little cross country festival in Norman, Oklahoma, and she was very good in high school, very good runner, but I didn't know who she was, at that point either, and I was collecting money for this little cross country. It was a cross country race, and it was like a $2 fee or something. And she came up, and she always tells this story that I was the first time she ever met me. I was a right jerk. So
sounds like the second time as well.
all our partners have got that story. So.
Yeah. The one constant.
So,
So she shows up anyway at this cross country. I think she's like 16 or 17, 16, 15 at the time, and she had a $5 on her that her mom had given her for the cross country entry fee, and I think the fee was like $2, and because we needed we figured $2 was enough. We had 20 people show up, that's $40. That would be enough for a keg of beer. So, you know, so not for at the cross country race, for after the cross country race, obviously. So I'm hanging out, collecting the money from all the runners, and she shows up with her $5 bill. And this is what she's been telling me, because I don't remember this at all. And I took the money, and she was like, I need some change. I said, I don't have any change. Off you go. And she was like, she looked at me, and she was like, what a jerk. So I don't even know whether she even got her money back, to be honest. But that was the first time I actually that she met me. But fast forward a few years is when we met at the jazz festival, and yeah, we've been together ever since. Yeah, so
and how when did it become a coaching relationship rather than just?
So she kind of quit running at that point. She was 19. She'd kind of gone to college, and she had a lot of injuries, and she kind of given up on the sport. And she had what you call a medical hardship. Is basically, if you're on a scholarship to any college and they give you a medical hardship, you get to go to college, you just can't run for the team anymore. You get to keep your scholarship. It's called a medical hardship scholarship. So she was on that, and she had kind of given up on running. And so I was the one, I was the runner in the family. I was just got my U.S. citizenship in the following year, and I was planning on running in the, trying to get the qualifying time to get to the Olympic U.S. trials for the marathon, and which I ended up doing. And so when we first started dating, I was the runner in the family.
What time was that, out of interest?
You had to run 2:22 back then to get into the marathon
trials.
Okay. Yeah, so I ended up doing 2:21, and then I ended up running 2:18 at the marathon trials. So I finished like, I think, 17th or 18th in the race. But now, back then I was a runner in the family, and she would help crew me. She'd like bring, you know, she'd be sitting in her car waiting for me to show up on a run, would give me my drinks and everything. And she always said, oh my god, you ran 20 miles today, I can't imagine ever running that far, you know. So you kind of look at, you know, what she's done with her own running. Yeah, it's kind of funny, you know. So I was the runner in the family. I was the famous one back then. Once we started kind of, you know, she started doing a bit of jogging, and we went up to Boulder in the summer of 2004 to do a bit of running. When I wanted to hook up with a few of my friends up there to do a bit of training, and she tagged along, and she loves telling the stories. One day we went out running together, and she got back after I got back, and I was like, how far did you run? And she was like, I just ran for like 80 minutes for fun. And we ended up figuring out she was running about 70 miles a week for fun, just going out every day and just enjoying the sport. And yeah, and that's kind of when I said, well, maybe I should start giving you some workouts. So I started giving her workouts, and yeah, started to just progress from there. Yeah, so yeah.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Is your house full of more tech tees than you know what to do with? Do you feel too guilty to throw them away, but you can't find them a good home? Well, now you can, with Tech Tees for Yankees. Meet Chad. He's 26 and from Colorado. He's been running for 9 years, but when summer comes, there's no Tech Tees for Chad. And he's not alone. Every year, millions of American men are forced to run topless, risking burnt nip and red hand slaps. And now you can help put an end to this tragedy. With Tech Tees for Yankees, you can help clothe runners like Chad and help stop Chad from being a cad. And how's it been for you going from being the person who was, I guess, the more famous runner to suddenly being...
I wouldn't say I'm more famous. I'm just, you know, I was probably just...
I'm kind of a bigger deal.
Well, you know, it's been fun, actually, you know, because you kind of, you know, you kind of look back on where she was at the point where she was probably giving up on the sport to kind of enjoying the sport to being where she is now. It's a great story to tell, you know, and I think, you know, you kind of look at, you know, we have a coaching business now, and we kind of look at some of the people we coach on a day-to-day basis, and it's the same kind of stories. You know, it's amazing if someone is, you're able to shape someone's running career and move it in a positive direction, what can come from that, you know? And there's tons of people like that out there. You know, you think of some of the runners out there that kind of give up on the sport, and then they had a mentor that kind of brought them along. It's kind of exciting, you know? So, it's been brilliant, yeah.
Do you think that time away actually can be beneficial, and people can end up a better runner than if they'd have trained all the way through?
Well, in Camille's case, she had just, you know, you've heard the old saying, burning the candle at both ends. I think, you know, she was, you know, still growing into her body. You know, she had a lot of stress in her life with school. She's the personality she is. She wants to be good at everything. And I kind of told her early on, well, you know, you got to pick maybe one or two things in life you want to be really good at and just focus on that. And Corey, you know, obviously she took my advice and she kind of just focused on, you know, just getting her degree first and enjoying that, and then focus on your running. And it's been a long process, you know. The biggest thing that I kind of more proud of anything else is that she's kind of stuck with it through all the ups and downs and all the things that she's had to do. And when she writes her book, there's a lot of stories in there that no one knows about that she'll love to share. And there's some great stories that, like, just it goes to show you the adversity that she's overcome. And it kind of goes to show you what she's done in the sport is because of what she's been through, this never give up attitude and those kind of things. And but, you know, 13 years, over 13 years now, averaging over 160 kilometers per week. You know, think about that. That's just savage, you know? So, it is.
In terms of just, I don't know if you can answer this, but in terms of you said that the people that you're coaching at the moment, you know, they've had a lot of people have had a similar thing with injuries, which, you know, put them out of the sport. Is it the same situation with them? Is that the general thing, is that they haven't, that either other things have been involved in their life at the point they were doing running, and it was causing some kind of conflict, or they weren't able to focus enough on running, and it's a case of just stepping back and then just focusing on it?
No, that's a good question. I think a lot of it is they just don't know how to train, you know, you think about, you know, there's periodizations in training, you know, you have your, you know, throwing out words like microcycle and macrocycle now, things where you have to go through in stages of your running where, you know, you want to get to a certain point. And a lot of times just people don't understand, you know, maybe a lot of times they just never been told how to run, or they just never learned along the way that, okay, you know, there's a reason for doing this workout now this week, or there's a reason why your paces should be at this pace for your run. So a lot of times it's just, they don't have the knowledge. Maybe that's a negative way of looking at it. I think they just don't have the, just structure. You know, the structure of a proper training plan to kind of get you where you want to go, I think, you know. And then, you know, you kind of throw on top of that, you know, lifestyle, you know, expectations. You know, a lot of people we coach are adults, so they have things going on. And, you know, it's just, you just have to balance everything out, you know. And I think that's just part of it. You look at Camille, like, and it's kind of fortunate she has me, because I kind of take care of everything, you know. All she has to do is just focus on her running, you know. She doesn't have to worry about paying bills or cooking dinner, or, you know, we had bacon and cabbage last night, you know. I was in here slaving away in the kitchen making that, you know. So, well, she was out doing her 2-hour run, you know, so, yeah.
I mean, if you have to slave to make bacon and cabbage.
it wasn't that hard, I'll give you that.
Tonight, a la pot noodle.
Ha ha ha.
It isn't that hard, yeah.
And how have you learned to, because your background has been, as you say, cross country, some indoor and marathon training.
Yeah.
How have you learned how to coach Camille firstly, yep. also Camille at ultra distance?
As an ultra runner, yeah. So when we got into this, so obviously she's a marathon background and, you know, she ended up running 2:37 for the marathon, which is good. Not world class, but it's definitely at a national level. But you know, I remember back in 2015 when she ran her first 100K on the road. I remember I dropped her off at the airport because back then I was still collegiately working full time. I was at college head coach, and I dropped her off at the airport. And I remember saying to her, "Are you sure you want to do this?" So you know, it was one of those things where, you know, I didn't know anything about the sport, you know, and she didn't really know anything about the sport either. But what we found in the last few years is that we kind of take that marathon kind of background, and we've tweaked a few things. But we kind of kept the marathon background training as kind of our core, you know, like doing simple stuff, but just consistency over a long period of time. And, you know, I read a lot of books when we started getting more serious about the ultra run. I read a lot of books, but half the stuff was just, you know, the back-to-back long runs. That's just, I just don't see that as a benefit, to be honest. A lot of what we do is just basic, simple training, you know, that you would apply to anything, to be honest. You know, it's just, we tweak it a little bit. A lot of it has to do with the paces, you know. Her typical easy pace is about, you know, 2 minutes slower than her race pace typically, you know. So it's kind of like a thing that we kind of focus on a lot is recovery, you know, when you're running that many miles, I think. And but you know, it's been a learning process, I'll be honest with you. I'm still learning, you know, because when we take someone on, a lot of times they're kind of coming from that background where they think they have to do back-to-back long runs, they have to do these long sessions of 30 miles in the mountains. And our whole philosophy is you don't have to kind of do that. You kind of look at it from a background where let's just take it nice and easy, let's just back off the mileage a little bit, but do some very focused workouts in that build-up that will help you, you know. So yeah. So
and have you tried has Camille tried, have you tried the back-to-back?
We did.
Found that they weren't working, or?
Yeah, when we first started into the ultra running scene, we kind of did the back-to-back long runs. We did these long workouts where we thought that was what you had to do. And she was just tired all the time, you know, and she never recovered, you know. And so that's when we decided, let's just go back to what we did as marathons. And it was a kind of a hit and miss, to be honest, starting out. It was kind of like, oh, let's try this and see what happens. Because we didn't know what would happen on the other end. But, you know, the one thing we found is she was really fresh going into these races. You know, we don't believe in tapering as much. We'd like to keep up the frequency of training. We obviously back off the mileage a little bit, but we keep up the frequency. So, like the week before Albi in October, she ran 116 miles the week before. You know, so, okay. Yeah.
So that's a normal week, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Normal week, anywhere between 100 and 120 miles, yeah. Typically the week before a big race, yeah. So, yeah. So, like right now, with all this stuff going on, all these races being cancelled, she ran 120 miles last week, you know. So, so we're just going to keep rolling with it here and see what happens, yeah. So,
and was she running that 110, 120 mile when she was doing her marathon training, or was that has it increased towards ultra?
Yeah, it has increased. It's a good question. Yeah, when we were doing the marathon training, she was a little bit lower. She was about 105, 106. So we have, and that's just over time, you've kind of learned, you know, a little bit more mileage is good for you, spread it over a long period of time. So yeah, so her sweet spot right now is about 120 to 130 a week, and that seems to work for her. But having said that, you know, she does about 12, 13 doubles in a week. She typically runs until the day she feels super tired, which is about, we figured that's about maybe 6, 7, 8 days where she does doubles. So she'll take either a single that day or a complete rest day. Very rare she'll take a rest day. It's just a single that day where she might just go. But a lot of it is like, you know, when we start out a training cycle, we typically want to hit a lot of things in that, but we typically spread it out so that we kind of let her feel her way, and she'll suggest things to me like that we know work. And I'll sometimes say that works great. Or other times I'll say, well, no, let's wait a week to do that. Let's do this, you know? So, and that's where we are right now. She's kind of learned over time that that's what works for her. And yeah. So,
And I remember when we were talking to Camille about some of her pre-comrades training, where she was only really doing one really hilly session once a fortnight, maybe, you know, maybe once a week at times. Now that she's surrounded by hills constantly, if you had to dramatically change the nature of the workouts and also the total mileage.
What we do now is, obviously, because we're on dirt a lot more, so what we found is, ever since we've been up here, is that she recovers a lot quicker. And granted, she's not working full time anymore either, so she's full time with her running now. So she's able to recover a lot quicker, mainly because she's just resting a lot more. So her frequency now, we've kind of jumped up. We're kind of like seeing how she is, but right now we're kind of doing two main workouts a week, and that seems to be beneficial to her right now. But now, having said that, like you probably saw, she ran the Black Canyon 100K there back when we came back from England, Birmingham, from the National Running Show. And that was kind of like the last minute decision. She had done a good workout that week and was like, well, let's just go run. You feel like you want to race. And she's like that. She's like, she loves to race. But the fact, because she had this pretty stressful job the last few years where there was a lot of projects that were due, and then she had these little niggles that showed up out of nowhere, and then obviously the car crash last year kind of put a dampener on things too. So she's at the point now where she's able to recover quickly, mainly because she runs in a lot more dirt and she's running full time. So we're kind of like at that point now where we're able to do about two workouts a week, whereas in the past we were only able to do maybe one good quality workout a week. And keep the mileage up too.
And have you mentioned she's obviously not working full time now. Are you throwing in extra things at that time that you couldn't fit in before, or is it just a lack of work?
I think it's just, I think it's more to do with just, she's a little bit more time in her hands right now. So, you know, so so we're kind of able to do, she does she's got a good strength and conditioning kind of program she works that she does. And she kind of, she does a lot of stuff that, you know, she's had a lot of hamstring issues the last few years. And we're kind of hopefully over that now. She does a lot of work with that kind of stuff. She does a lot of stuff that's focused on that, helping that. And then obviously I have a little background now in massage therapy. So I'm able to work on her a little bit more during the week, those kind of things. So, but the biggest thing more than anything else is that it's just a very stress-free environment here. So she's just enjoying things a lot more now. She doesn't have to worry about getting in her car to go to a job, or you might get plowed by somebody else on the side of a road, you know, so those kind of things, you know. So it's just, when you take all that stress out of a person's life, you kind of enjoy every day, you know, and those kind of things.
And how is it as a couple also being a coach? Does it sometimes lead to frustrations
or
like how do you manage that, and what's the worst that it gets?
You know, I've learned along the way that patience is a great word, you know, and I think I learned that from my college days coaching 19 to 22 year olds. But no, I'll be honest with you, you know, we started this coaching business now, and that keeps us pretty busy. You know, it's kind of, the people we coach are very fortunate because they've got two great coaches. You know, a lot of coaches, they maybe have a coaching business, they just have one coach. So I handle a lot of the communication. And obviously then when we do our plan, our workouts, we're going back and forth about what can work for an athlete. So there is a lot of communication. But as far as just day to day, no, you know, the girl is spoiled rotten. You know, she gets up at 10 o'clock in the morning and her coffee is made for her. And, you know, she just sits on her nice couch out there, watches TV. And
all the bacon and cabbage, you go. Come on.
Exactly.
All the bacon and cabbage.
2 o'clock in the afternoon, she's just gone for her first run of the day. You know, she'll come back, I'll have her lunch will be made for her, you know, and then she'll go take her nap, and then she'll be up, then after her nap, her tea will be made, a cup of tea and a nice bit of toast for her, and then she'll be out the door for her second run, and then when she comes back, her dinner's made. God, it's like the life of Riley, you know, so...
So is that typical that she'll have two runs will both be in the afternoon then? Because I'd have assumed that her first would be 9 o'clock or something.
Oh, God,
like
no.
That.
She's still in bed snoring away 9 in the morning. No, Camille's not really a morning person. She's not. She never has been. And so it's very rare that, obviously, you know, she'll get up to, if there's a race, obviously she'll get her arse up and run that, obviously. But, you know, a lot of times, yeah, she's like 2 o'clock, 2:30 before she heads out the door. And then typically 10 o'clock at night for her second run. 10 o'clock.
Wow, 10 at night.
Oh, yeah.
Why then?
Oh, she just loves running at nighttime. And out here, it's like, you know, you go a mile and you're on these quiet dirt roads that are just, you know, she has a headlamp and she just goes and runs. And we have this app that she, it's called Life 360. So I'm able to follow her on that to keep an eye on her in the evening. But yeah, typically, yeah, she'll go out at 10 o'clock, 10:30 at night. Yeah, 11 o'clock at night for her second run. Yeah, she'll stay up until probably 1 or 2 in the morning then. After she has her dinner and I've gone to bed, and she stays up usually and yeah, does maybe some coaching stuff or just hangs out, just surfs the web, and then she goes to bed. Yeah. Yeah. So that's typically, she goes to bed between 1:30, 2 o'clock and sleeps until about 9:30, 10. So she's getting a good 8 hours, and then she'll take another 2-3 hour nap during the day. Yeah. So.
And is that mid afternoon sleep now a common occurrence? And
oh yeah, 5 o'clock. Yeah, 5 o'clock. She hits the bed at 5 o'clock. She'll sleep till about 8. Yeah.
So, and have you seen a visible change in performance with that being introduced?
Well, yeah. She ran 167 miles in October, didn't she? For 24 hours, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and she went and ran that 100K Canyons, and then 2 weeks later, she went and ran the 50K Road Champs and won that too. Yeah, so, yeah, so we're doing all right, yeah. But this whole coronavirus has put a bit of dampener on everything, hasn't it? Yeah, so.
Although, in a way, you know, isolation for her lifestyle, is it doesn't affect it that much other than the races, obviously. But
yeah, but we're brainstorming about things we're going to do. I think, you know, we're talking about maybe an FKT we might do in April. Mm. And then there's also, we were talking about maybe doing some kind of a fundraiser where she'd run from one city to the next and maybe set up something with some of her sponsors to kind of maybe someone, you know, kind of do a, you know, I'm going to run this in so many miles if everyone wants to donate a dollar to this or something, you know? So, yeah, so kind of help some kind of a foundation or something. Yeah, so we're talking about things that will kind of keep her interested in, you know, until this blows over, yeah, so.
And so, as, you know, as her partner and her coach, in things like the 24-hour...
And everything else, bottle washer, and washing the clothes, cooking the dinner, massage therapist, paying the bills, taking the dogs for a walk, getting the car clean, what else?
Do you think
I'm not doing as a wife in our arse.
Not yet.
Do you think that would have a noticeable improvement in performance? Because I think...
Probably. Who knows, maybe.
Do you think
we'll give it a go tomorrow. I'm going to wipe your arse and let's see how you do in your workout.
And do you think that's an advantage at things like the 24-hour race to have someone there who knows her as well as you?
Yeah, no, it's. I think, you know, having crew that you can trust, I think, is huge. And obviously, in my case, and kind of what we've kind of learned along the way is I kind of let Camille figure out what she wants. And then she lets me know, and then I have everything there. So whatever we need to do, I get it figured out and get it to her. Yeah. So, yeah. So.
And what do you know to do to motivate Camille if she's struggling?
I think the biggest thing that I've learned along the way is staying calm, I think, is huge. I think being able to portray still confidence when you're puking on the side of the track, or you're shitting all over yourself and the Polish and the Norwegian team are up in arms because of it, and things are being filed with the IAU delegates and they're having meetings and all this, and just staying calm and just enjoying it all, and just it's all just part of the process. Yeah,
so. And she's so jovial with us, and every time we've seen her, does she have breakdowns with you? Does she ever lose it?
Yeah, she lost it this morning when I didn't have our coffee ready. Her bacon and cabbage wasn't cooked right last night. She gave me a bit of an earful about that. Nah, you know, I think a lot of people don't. She's actually very, you know, she's not a very outgoing person. She's very quiet, actually. And, you know, a lot of people don't see that, you know, obviously, because when she talks, she's very jovial and upbeat. Mm. But she actually is a very, you know, she's a very quiet person. She likes to keep to herself. And she's, you know, obviously, you know, I'll talk all day long until the cows go home. I'm just like that, you know. So she just gets kind of tired of me now and then. But, you know, we've been together 20 plus years now. So if she hasn't got rid of me yet, then we're good.
Yeah, that's nothing to do with coaching, is it?
No.
I just wondered that David is an expert at this, but the old mind games thing, do you do the old mind games thing with competitors?
You know, Camille's very motivated, very self-motivated, but there is sometimes when you kind of have to, you know, especially I think back in Albi when she was running the World 24-Hour Championships, and at one point she was kind of looked like she was laying down, she was kind of feeling a bit sorry for herself and laying down on the medical bench, and I had to get on her a little bit there, so I had to kind of be a little forceful, but I kind of know when to push her buttons. But most of the time, when you're dealing with an athlete of this caliber, a lot of times it's kind of holding the reins back too, I think. Mm. You know, you kind of have to be there for support and just more kind of just, you know, I've kind of seen the highs and lows, and there's been a lot of lows, you know, in Camille's running career. Yeah, a lot of people don't know some of the things that she had to go through to get her sponsorships and those kind of things. And part of it is just being a shoulder to cry on, I think, and just being able to support her as a spouse, obviously. But then, obviously, just being part of the process too. And you know, I was always raised with the belief that, you know, you just, if you want something bad enough, you just got to go after it. You grab the bull by the two horns, basically. And I've kind of had that, we've kind of had that kind of expectation ever since we've been together, that if you want to achieve something, you kind of have to go out and get it, you know, and there's no messing around. You just have to put the work in. And she's kind of taken that to a whole nother level, basically, you know, what she's done in the sport, you know. So, yeah. So.
Sorry, David.
I know, you go ahead, Jenny.
No, as I say, in terms of, I was just thinking in terms of, from the management perspective, and you were talking about sponsorship there. Surely, I mean, you're in a very, very different place than where, you know, where ultra running was, you know, 10 years ago. Whereas the fact that there wasn't the sponsorship there, and you're almost, you know, the negotiations you're having with the brands are almost the first time that they're ever negotiating with ultra runners.
Right.
I mean, did anything come out of that was surprising, or in terms of what their expectations were? Did they really understand how, you know, the ultra scene worked?
We were fortunate, coming from a marathon background, we kind of knew what sponsorships were like, but we felt that whenever she started doing really well, we felt we had to get an agent. So we hired Mark Massalier, who I know you've interviewed.
Yeah,
great guy. And he really went to bat for her, because Nike said no to her a few times before they said yes. And part of it was,
what do they say when they're saying no?
Well, I think they just told him, no, we're not interested. So they said, yeah, you know. And, you know, I think the part of it is you kind of have to give them a little bit kind of like, you know, this is what I'm going to do and this is how I'm going to do it. And she wrote a very passionate email. And in that email, she said she wanted to be the greatest there ever was. And she said that don't let other things influence that. And they, you know, the person in particular, the global marketing manager for Nike, believed what he read, and he told Mark, you know, I like this girl. So she signed a long-term contract with them, and obviously, yeah, the winning comrades 6 months after that helped. But overall, the whole thing with sponsorships, it's, you know, a lot of times what we found is, you know, small brands, they kind of want a social media presence. So you kind of have to do the monthly posts about the product, whatever you're promoting. And I'll be honest with you, we've kind of moved away from that now, because we feel like, you know, Camille and herself is a brand. So we're promoting Camille. So, you know, so if Camille was to promote something, it's going to be through her running. It's going to be breaking world records. It's going to be winning a world championship, you know, winning a Western States, breaking a course record at Western States. So we feel like we let her running do the talking, basically. So we've kind of moved away from having to do any kind of promotion. But having said that, a lot of athletes that are getting into the sport, or athletes that feel like they want a sponsorship, they have to understand that that's part of the process, especially when you're working with small brands, that you're kind of obligated to do these social media posts and those kind of things. Yeah. So.
And have you run into any issues with sponsors where you
haven't first done we did.
The right
content? Yeah, at first we did. When she was started in this a few years ago, we felt that that's what the sponsorship brands were pushing. They were pushing things like you had to do your two bi-weekly posts about your product, whatever that. But now we're kind of at the point now where, you know, we don't really, you know, if she's going to promote something, she wants to feel like it's natural. She wants to, she doesn't feel like it's part of a script. And there's a lot of athletes out there that probably have to do that. Or a lot of brands that actually promote their athletes like that. But we feel like Camille wants to be very authentic in what she does. So if she's going to post about something, a product or a brand that she promotes, that she loves, then she wants to do it in a more natural way, you know? So she doesn't feel like she has to be pushed to do that. So, and And I'm fortunate now, you know, I had a full-time collegiate head coaching job, and I kind of gave all that up so I could be part of that, because I saw the pressure and that she was under to do all these things, trying to get a sponsorship. So I'm kind of fortunate. I work with Mark directly, and so Camille has kind of left all of that. She just has to focus on her running and just enjoying the sport every day, and then myself and Mark kind of focus on the other parts of the sport, you know, the other parts of the business. Yeah. So.
And how much, in terms of the sponsors you've got and the sponsors you've spoken to and the sponsors you may have,
mm-hmm.
are you willing to make any compromises for the sake of, you know, financial backing and exposure, or?
No, not really. I think we're at the point now where with her Nike contract, it's a six-figure contract. And you know, and then she has some smaller sponsorships, but what kind of the way we look at it is, you know, we're doing pretty well with our coaching business, so we don't feel like we need to compromise with anything other than that, you know. So when she was getting into the sport, she wanted, her goal wanted to be the best there ever was, and she continues on that path, and I'm here to make sure that she kind of fulfills that dream that she has. Mark is here to fulfill that dream for her too. So that's kind of how we approach it in that sense. You know, she wants to be the best there ever was. So, you know, she knows what she needs to do, and everything else then kind of falls in our lap, like in relation to all that, you know? So, yeah.
Do you think if this had have happened, say 10 years earlier, then this would never have got to this state? And then sense that, you know, the fact that there was the money there from Nike allowed you to be able to, but she'd be able to like give up the job and have all the conditions in place in order to reach that goal.
Yeah, you know, you kind of look at when she fell into ultra running was 2015. So she was a little bit older. A lot of ultra runners these days, they kind of come to the sport a little bit younger, and, you know, they don't last as long. Whereas I think the fact that she had a marathon background, she had sponsorships before, nothing on the monetary level that she's on now, obviously, but she had sponsorships, but she also had a job. We weren't relying just on sponsorships to live day to day. And we've always had that approach that, you know, we're never going to be to the point where we're going to have to rely on sponsorships. We feel like, you know, we just approach this in the fact that it's not that it's a hobby to her, because it isn't, but she has that fun approach to it, you know, and I think that's important, that you kind of have that, to have that approach. But having said that, 10 years ago, obviously, the sport has exploded in the last so many years, and it's the good thing is that there is a lot of good positive things about that, but there also is a lot of negative things. Look at the level of we are big believers that the doping is it's not as huge in the sport, but we feel like that's a problem in the sport that hasn't been addressed yet. And she, I know that she's kind of pursuing a lot of things with that.
What makes you think that?
You know, you just kind of look at some of the results out there. Now, having said that, people would say that about Camille too, with some of the runs that she's had, you know, but she's been tested so many times, and she's the most morally obligated person that I know, you know. She's just, cheating is just not a part of her DNA, you know. Hard work and just the love of the sport is, you know. So but I think a lot has to do with the approach that a lot of these races and a lot of these companies, they don't bring to the table, is there needs to be a lot more consistency in testing, you know, a follow-up on a national kind of an agency kind of doing those kind of things, and at this point there isn't any of that going on, you know. So so that's the disappointing part of it. And
to a certain extent, that's because the money hasn't been there, I think, because it does take...
The money's there, you know, it's just been challenged in the wrong way. I think, you know, you kind of look at races like UTMB, you kind of look at what they're doing, you kind of look at now Spartan is getting involved in the sport in a big way, and Camille's actually signed on as an ambassador with Spartan. She feels like she wants to... She signed on. Right before I got on the phone with you, I was just on the phone with their brand manager. Yeah, they've got some great ideas about what they want to do in the sport. A lot of people just don't see that. All they see is, I got to pay $20 to get into a park so I can watch $20? Some trail. Whatever it is, well, $20, $15, $20 to get.
$80?
Is that what it is? I don't know, you know. So, but no, she's going to sign on, because, you know, that's all part of it, is the excitement that kind of those companies kind of bring, you know. they're heavily pushing doping, the doping control, those kind of things. Mm. They want that in the sport, you know. So yeah.
And we've actually been talking about Spartan in recent weeks about how they've moved into trails and the surprise money involved in that. And we were speculating back then, weren't we, JD, about whether it was going to attract some big names to come over. But wow, Camille's but they are they doing ultras then?
Yeah, they're gonna do the whole series set up. The it's a bunch of trade. They're actually buying a lot of these races up. So they're buying they're buying a bunch of races up. You need to have the brand manager. I'm gonna send them your information. So yeah, you can have a chat with them. Yeah. So yeah. So
I'll make sure that they don't listen to any of the previous episodes though, before they come on. Some words might have been said about Spartan. So don't recommend they listen.
When you're not there to defend yourself, obviously, you know, people are going to say what they're going to say. But yeah, no, it'd be good for them to get on there with you and have a chat with you.
I mean, that would be really interesting. And so now that you've mentioned that you've got Nike, you've got this big sponsorship, Spartan coming in, how much of your future planning of race schedules and also attempts are consultative with brands now?
A lot of we're at the point now where we kind of know, we kind of feel like what Camille wants to go after. And yeah, I think, you know, if you'd notice, we were going to set up a race there in April on the Nike campus, but that kind of, with everything that went on, we kind of had to cancel that. But that's something that's going to happen, I think, bring excitement to that and stuff, you know, try and break a world record on the Nike track, you know, in Beaverton and stuff like that. But a lot of the things at this point now, it's just after stuff that she kind of wants to go after and that she feels that she's. Whereas we move more away from road and track and those kind of things and move more towards trail now, I think, there's a whole nother world out there we're kind of excited about doing. But so I think the 48 hour is still on the cards. We need to get that one sorted out. We're going to do that here. And then obviously then the 6 day too, but that kind of will fall into what we're doing with the trail stuff too. So
the 6 days, the plan after the two.
I think, you know, we've been recruited by EMU in Hungary, and we're kind of looking at that over the next few years. But I think that's at a point where, you know, and typically when you kind of look at those kind of events, it's more to do with aerobic development than more than being able to handle that kind of load over so many days. Whereas when you're looking at some of the shorter stuff like the 100k and the 24 hour, that's more focused type training that you kind of have to focus on to do well at that. So that kind of go hand in hand with the trail stuff.
And actually, Dan Lawson, who was on the stage with Camille in the ultra stage at the National Running Show, he won it last year, I think, that race. So,
if you need the
intro for just
the race director, the race director has reached out and he's kind of like been talking, and we're kind of looking at maybe 2022 for that. So that's something that we're kind of looking at doing.
And you said earlier when there were times in the World 24 when you needed to push Camille's buttons. What does that mean? Like, how do you push her buttons?
You just kind of like, you know, just, well, there's certain different things. If it's something where she, you know, she's like, I said, she was kind of like lying on the medical, she'd kind of gone to a really rough spot where we kind of had to kind of square away. We had to change up her nutrition, the whole nutrition plan in the race. And once we figured that out, then she kind of still had some issues going on. And she got to the point where she was kind of like, I'd given her some it was like 19 hours, maybe 18, 19 hours in. And she kind of had some issues with spaghetti and some chicken soup, noodle soup, and that didn't go down. So that kind of came back up again. And there was she was kind of lying down in the main tent for a little bit. And then they wanted to bring her over to the medical tent. So they brought her over to the medical tent and they started talking about maybe doing some testing on her heart and stuff. And once I heard that, I was like, I shouted at her, come on, what are you doing? And she kind of did, what am I doing? And she kind of just jumped. She jumped up out of the bed they had for her. And she just got out in the course again. And I remember she got out in the course, I said, come on, you got 5 hours to go. Let's effing get after this, you know? And she kind of said, you're right. I need to effing get after it. And she took off, you know? So things like that, you know, you kind of have to, but most of the time it's about just making sure, like in that race, it was that she got her nutrition when she got it and that I didn't screw that up. And
So we've got a few questions from the listeners. They're mostly silly, as you'd expect. Firstly, Polly Keane, who I believe was the European beer mile record holder.
Very good.
Yeah, she's asked who can down a beer faster, you or Camille, and who would win in a beer mile.
Cry, yeah, she'd kick my ass in both of them, yeah. That girl can pound a beer like you wouldn't believe, yeah. I've seen it too, yeah. I'd be left in the dust. I like drinking my beer. I don't like slamming it, but she'll just pound away and get after it, yeah. So.
And with your, because you're sponsored by Dead Guy Ale.
I wouldn't tell. They send us, all they were doing was sending us a free load of lager every month, but that's kind of dried up now. So
We moved.
So I think they might have sent some stuff to the old house.
And I'm sure new neighbors are having a great time.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of dried up. But beer is only a six pack around here is $9, So I'd rather just be. And this kind of goes back to I talk about the whole social media thing. We're kind of moving away from having to promote beer companies and all those kind of things. Just enjoy a beer without having to say something about it on social media,
Although I think if you, the times that we see Camille most commonly shared on social media is she's eating tacos or drinking beers while doing amazing things, because that's what catches the headlines. That's the key thing.
Yeah, but she's just doing that because she just enjoys eating tacos and beer and going out for a run. Yeah, she's not doing it to promote any business, trust me. So,
I've got a question from Julius, which is how do you balance protecting Camille without taking away her control too much?
That's a good question. I think we're pretty much even keel in how we approach things every day, and we don't get too worried about things that might affect her long term. I think, we have a plan that we kind of look at our goals that we have right now, our goals 6 months from now, our goals a year from now, and a lot of those long term goals are things that I kind of discuss with the agent, kind of away from that. So it's a lot of what Camille kind of enjoys right now is just the day to day present. So we kind of don't get hooked up on those kind of things, to be honest. Yeah. So good question though.
We've got another question from Tangible on Instagram. She's asking, apart from the beer and burrito, what are the essential items in Camille's kit bag?
Oh, God. You mean to eat afterwards or like during the race?
It could be anything, actually. Yeah, what always goes in there?
In her when she's getting ready for a race, or just like
hour race.
So gels, the gels, obviously, we've kind of collaborated with Unibed now. That's her sponsor, her nutrition sponsor, that we've kind of changed up the she likes the simple gel that they have, just the Unibed gel. She's kind of, they made us a Unibed Elite gel, but they have that sodium bicarbonate in it, and that stuff makes you shit like you wouldn't believe. So so we kind of stayed away from that. So but the gels would be in there, and then obviously, she has like a caffeine tablet that she'll take, the no dose tablet. She'll take a half of one of them before the race, and then she'll take another half a few hours in. And then the sports drink and those kind of things. And then obviously I'm for after the race, I got to have all the burger and the beer ready to go after the race. I'm kind of in charge of that.
And then we got one last question from Anant Adventures is, what do you spend with your time when she's running?
Jesus, just making sure I can stay on top of shit, to be honest. When she's out doing crewing, if you're going to some of these trail races, you just walk back from your run now. Yeah, she just walked in the door here.
Hey, Camille.
Yeah. They're saying hello to you here.
Hi.
Yeah. So, there she is, So I was going to say, so a lot of times when you're doing the trail races, you kind of have to make sure you don't get lost to get to the next aid station. I kind of have to zone all that out. But a lot of times when you go to these aid stations, you get talking to the volunteers, you get talking to the other crews, and it's actually a pretty relaxing time. And then once, the athlete shows up, and in Camille's case, it's in and out. She doesn't mess around when she comes into the aid station. She just gets her stuff and takes off again. So it's a 2-minute process. But on the track races, that's a little different, obviously, because you're in the one spot all the time. And it's when we did our first ultra back in Desert Solstice, when she ran her first 24-hour, when she broke the world record 162 miles, I got a little bit tired during that one, about 2 or 3 in the morning, but I had to take a caffeine tablet myself. But this last one, when she ran in Albi, I didn't get tired at all, because it was going non-stop to make sure she wasn't, because there was times where she took the 2 7-minute naps to make sure she was nice and relaxed when she did that. And that was a good thing too, that when you have those kind of things going on, that you can just relax and enjoy it and just let her take everything in, you know, that you're not pushing her to get out the door again. Like, whereas when she was on the medical tent, it was like, get the arse out of there. What are you doing in here? You know, kind of thing, you know, so. But,
And I know the last time I spoke to Camilla, she mentioned, we were talking about how she hasn't necessarily been welcomed as warmly by the ultra community as you.
That's all my fault.
I mean,
the Irish asshole here.
it's your MO every time you meet your jerk. That's the
that's right. They just need to meet you a second time.
It's the second time your best besties,
but have you?
No, yeah, go ahead,
yeah. Have you seen that? Because you've obviously in the things like the track races been surrounded by all the other teams as well. I mean, have you sensed that as well? And have you seen that changed? Or?
Well, I think part of it is Camille will obviously come out before she races and says what she's going to do. Whether it's I'm going to break a world record or I feel like I'm going to break 16 hours of Western States. And a lot of times women in sport, they're not supposed to say those kind of things or... There's, you know, it's an odd thing, and obviously Camille's a very strong-willed woman. You know, I know that I'm married to her, and when she's going after something, she's going to say what she's going to do, and a lot of people will perceive that as being cocky or being too ambitious, or you know, oh, that's a woman shouldn't say those kind of things, which is odd. Exactly, which is odd because you have the likes of Jim Walmsley who comes out and says what he's going to do, and everyone seems to embrace that. I can't see why the problem is with a woman doing it too, you know. So I think that's part of the problem. Is that's why maybe. And the other thing too is that Camille just hasn't ran too many trail races. She's run a few and she's ran really well, but a lot of times I think part of it is just the process to going through all that. But you're right, you know, some people in the sport are kind of look at it like, oh, like a woman shouldn't say those kind of things, or and I think it's odd in this day and age that you have to kind of think like that, you know. This isn't breaking the madman kind of situation, you know, scenarios where you have those kind of it's just all part of it. But you know, I tell her every time anyone ever gets on her case, she'll just go out there and kick their arse and that'll be the end of it. so
Connor says the ultronic community is misogynist. That's what we end up
basically.
And when would you say is the moment you've been most proud of Camille?
That's a great question. The day I've been most proud of her, probably, you know, I think we haven't seen that yet. No, I think, you know, you kind of look at the drive. I think back when she was trying to get her sponsorship with Nike, and a lot of times, a lot of athletes would have said, you know, I think I'll just give up. I think I feel like, you know, I'm not getting anywhere in the sport, and I feel like I'm just not getting anywhere, and I feel like, you know, there's all these things against me. And that kind of shows you, you know, the kind of athlete and the kind of person that she is, the never give up attitude. And you kind of look at back in her own early 8 years when she was growing up, you know, her dad is a very, very good basketball player in college, and very, very hard, stern, you know, tough nose, that kind of. And she's kind of grown up with that attitude, that never give up. So that's probably, it's an ongoing thing. I see it every day. The ability to be able to go in, day out, and focus on something for as long as she does, and the ability to be able to go out there and train at the level she trains at. And because she knows, she has this belief. And it's not something that I believe you can coach in someone. Being a coach myself now, being around a lot of coaches, it's not something that you can, it's a belief that you have to have to be. And you think of all the great athletes out there, they have this belief. And I think she has this belief, she wants to be the best there ever was. And she knows what she needs to do to get there. And my job is to be part of that and help her move along that, and I have no problem with that, obviously, because you know we're living it right now. So I think that's probably what I'd say I'm most proud of, is I see it day in, day out, this belief that she knows what she needs to do, and she's going about it, and a never give up attitude. And that's a very rare in this day and age that you find that, a never give up attitude, that you kind of want to get after something and just so that's what I'm most excited about. I see it every day.
And what do you think is ultimately the most achievable? What do you think in 10 years' time we're going to be talking about the most about careers? Camille's career. Like, what do you think she can achieve that she hasn't yet? That it's just going to blow people's minds.
I think breaking 12 hours for 100 miles. I think a lot of people will talk about that. I think 175 miles for 24 hours.
Yeah.
I'm thinking breaking Yannis Korda's record for 48 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something that she feels it's very doable. And then obviously then breaking 16 hours at Western States. I think that's pretty doable too. If everything goes right for her. And then I think, you kind of look at maybe running across America, breaking Pete Kostenek's record. 44 days, I think it is. But then not only that, but like people will remember, like I said, people will remember the things that, what she did for the sport too. I think I got to go back to what I talked about with doping and being a leader, in that regard. And that's kind of hard too, because, when you're an athlete at the top of your game and you're pushing for things that a lot of people aren't pushing for, you can kind of be looked at as being someone that's outspoken or something that's a negative part of it. But I think to push for clean sport is huge in this day and age, I think. And to have that ability to be able to transcend the sport and bring the sport up to the level it should be brought up to, I think that's huge. Yeah. So.
And last one for me, anything you can tell us that's going to get you in trouble with Camille?
God, you can tell me. God, I don't know. I think everything. She knows almost everything about me, I think. Yeah. So now and then, I always crack about. There's the odd TV show that comes on, and there might be a name that pops up in the TV show, and I was like, oh, I remember that girl. I used to date her. The name, like Sally or whatever. Yeah. So she'd look at me like, what are you talking about? I never told me about that. Any secrets
about Camille you can tell that will get you in trouble?
About Camille? I think it's one of those things where, I don't know. You'd have to come back to me on that one. I don't know. I think she's sitting here waiting on her lunch. I know that.
Get the bacon on.
Get the bacon on. She's looking at me like, when are you going to eat me lunch? Yeah. So.
Well, so. Thank you so much, Connor, for coming.
Yeah.
It's been as fun as I knew it would be.
Yeah, and, cheers. Yeah.
Obviously, next time you're passing through London, give me a shout. We can properly Absolutely. Go on a session.
There you go. Yeah, we're enjoying that the Birmingham the National Running Show. It was really fun. We enjoyed that weekend. Yeah, it was fun.
Well, so, you're definitely welcome back.
It'll be fun. Yeah, if we can be able to get back there next year again. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. So
that'd cool. be amazing. Anything else, Jody? You want to throw in there?
No, I don't think so. I think we've covered everything. No.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Connor. Good luck with everything in the next year, the next decade, and we'll hopefully be speak to you soon.
Yeah, take care. Thanks again, boys.
Yeah. All right, that's good.
See you. Cheers. Bye. All right, bye-bye. Bye.
I like your question there. What do you want to see is going to happen in the last 10 years? And then he reels off a list of the...
Like, so many incredible things. Just
doable.
Yes. Yeah, so next week, like by the end of the year.
Yeah, 10 years. Next 18 months.
But I love that. I love the ambition. I love the confidence. I love just the honesty about it as well.
It is funny what he was saying about the fact that she goes out and she says, this is what I'm going to do. And then people don't like that. It's weird, isn't it? I've never paid that much attention before races like that to hear people come out and say that. But I suppose the thing that really does it is the fact that she says it and she actually achieves it on a consistent basis, which must. I think we picked up on this, didn't we? That it was quite galling that there were a lot of people in the ultra community who've been plugging away for years and years and years, and then essentially came along and sort of swept them aside quite quickly and in quite a dramatic fashion. But it is funny coming out and saying that you're going to do something, because that only really happens in boxing, doesn't it?
Yeah, when you've got an advantage by saying that.
Yeah,
when it's a mind game. But maybe it isn't. Well, but it's not a mind game, because she's going for times most of the time. She never says she's going to win something. She says she's going to set this particular time. And but it's definitely true that it's males that say it more, partly because they get more media, so you hear it more.
Yeah, I did. I don't really pay attention to races enough to ever say I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that.
But also, I do think that most ultra runners know where they are in the grand scheme of things. You know, Jim Walsley, he went for the American US marathon trials. He didn't go in there thinking he's the best marathon runner in America. He's quite aware that he's not. And it could be he is the best ultra runner. It might be that he's aware that if some of those guys stepped up, he might not be. And that's the thing. It's not as if the people who were in ultra running before Camille came along weren't aware that there are far better runners out there. You can kid yourself a little bit, but if Paula Radcliffe steps up to track running, like track 100 milers, all those records would be blown away.
Well, yeah, no, that was it, wasn't it? It was as though, like, as long as everyone stays in lane, we're kind of protected in I mean, that's a good analogy, actually, if everyone stays in lane.
But I like it. True. You're proud of that one, aren't you?
That was kind of always the thing about ultrarunning, wasn't it? Is the fact that, like, as soon as a serious marathon runner or something starts to do an ultra, you're going to start seeing those numbers tumble, because they were always pretty slow numbers. And the fact that they have tumbled so incredibly over the last 10 years to levels where we just are almost impossible to believe.
Yeah, and as soon as there's so much money that the B-string African runners realise that it's worth doing, that's going to be a whole new change as well.
What do you think of the Spartan? Is that an exclusive? I'd love it if that was an exclusive.
It might be. I've not heard anything about an Ultra Series yet, and I think it would have been shared with us by now if it was official. So
Spartan like us.
Well, just by someone else. We've got enough listeners who would have mentioned it or shared it. But I mean, that's going to be really interesting if they are doing Ultra Series and kind of taking on the...
When you finish Ultra, will you have to do burpees?
Oh, could you imagine that? Yeah. There's going to be something, because there's nothing that Spartan do that they don't create controversy in some way. So... Yeah, there will be something that either goes wrong or just captures the headlines somehow for the reasons that we think are terrible and wrong, but they probably just love the fact they're getting the headlines. So, we'll see. But, I mean, how nice is that, the journey they've had together and the fact that he happened to have been a runner? I guess she knew when she spoke to him, but that they met through boozing, and... He then happened to be a college coach as well when she discovered running again. Like, all these things are so...
Yes, fortuitous. So, yeah, like, what are the chances? Like, that she rediscovers her enjoyment of running, but just because she's met someone who is very relaxed about it. Serious about it, but kind of relaxed about it.
Yeah, completely. Because that's the thing, if he was a different personality type, she probably would have been driven out of the sport before she found the love and realized she was doing 70 miles a week.
Yeah.
And so so many just lovely coincidences that have created this situation. But,
I want to go on a running trip around the United States, just to be driven to different bits of the United States and run like 10 miles, 20 miles there, just to know what it's like running in that bit of the country, because the problem is it's so vastly different. It's like, someone says Colorado, I'm like, I don't really know what I'm picturing there. I know,
or even 3,000 meters. Have you been above 3,000 meters before?
Yeah, I know, but still, I don't know what the what that running looks like on the track where it's, you know. I'd like to run in like Utah. I'd like to run in like bizarre places, North Dakota. I'd like to run, you know, I just want to see what those different environments are like.
Mm. Yeah, and also I think just getting a sense of the community there and the people that are running there and that what their interactions as runners are like locally, because I don't know if there's just such a different community and way of running to the England scene.
Yeah.
Even the fact they've got collegiate running, you do have colleges that can compete with each other, but you'd never get a running scholarship, even for Oxford or Cambridge or Loughborough, I wouldn't have thought, unless you're like GB level.
Yeah, I've never even heard of it. But then, again, I'm just not aware of it at all. Like you say, the fact that you get a running scholarship.
Yeah. I mean, that's, well, I don't know many runners now who would have been good enough back then. But yeah, that's, and maybe that's changing now, because actually when we were younger, you didn't need scholarships for university because it was all free. So,
sorry, millennials.
Sorry, millennials, but at least you're not dying of coronavirus. So who wins in the long term? Who wins in the long term? Cool. Well, if you've enjoyed listening to that episode, we've got
that 300 Camille Heron one. Yeah, we did. You can listen to
so many. We've spoken to whichever coaches we've had. We've got the interview with my running club chairman Jerry, who used to be a great 10,000 meter runner. He used to run against in the England Championships and all of that. We've spoken to Courtney DeWalter, another incredible female ultra runner who has, I think she's won Western States before, or at least lately in Leadenvale, or some of those big American ones. There's plenty of content out there for you. Then if you've enjoyed this, please subscribe. Please do leave us a 5-star review on Facebook.
The Mark Masterly interview as well. That's the other one to listen to, talking about being an ultra agent as well, because that ties into it. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, but I just remember that last minute.
And he's the very first ultra agent as well, isn't he?
The very first. One and only, isn't he?
Possibly. Yeah. And then if you, please subscribe and review on iTunes. Get in the Facebook group if you want to get involved in some of these conversations. If you do want to put questions to future guests, then follow us on Instagram, and we, as much as possible, try to put out a post beforehand just saying who the guest's going to be. And we do go through every question. The reason we don't ask them all is because they're fairly stupid predominantly. So we try to filter out the ones that are just nonsensical.
That's by our standards.
Yeah. But we also do try and incorporate them into the interview, and if not, then say them at the end. So, yeah, thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back next week with another great guest. And until then, bye bye.
I must admit I was a clown to be messing around, but that doesn't mean that you have to leave town. Come back. Yes, and give me one more try, 'cause a love like this should I never ever die. Come back.
Fuck you, buddy.